Welcome back to the Hawks Talk podcast, your source for everything
For
about the
everything
Upper
about
Valley Nighthawks and the NECBL. This is Season 3, Episode 9, Peek into the Press Box. I'm your host, Phoebe Winters, joined by co-host Caitlin Beal and our public address announcer, Greg Fennell. Caitlin, Greg, how are we doing?
ready to get going. We wait long enough in the cold and the wind and the rain, and now we're finally enjoying some real spring-like weather around here. I'm ready for baseball to start.
Yeah, agreed. After the rainiest last week and cold, it's finally feeling like summer weather, and it's kind of perfect because then summer ball is starting in a week. So I think we're all eager to get there and get started.
Absolutely.
Definitely, like you guys said, the season is just a week away. And with that in mind, do you guys have any goals or bucket list items for the summer?
I would just like to see a little bit more of a successful season from a win-loss standpoint. It's been a while since the team has had a playoff caliber squad, and last year was kind of frustrating to watch. I would also like to see a team that is more aggressive on the base paths than they are. Than they have been. In watching the Sun Belt tournament over the weekend on television, I was introduced a little bit to Dean Meos, who's supposed to come up from Coastal Carolina, who had some ridiculous stolen base numbers and pulled one off on Southern Miss as well in the league final. So I'm optimistic in that end. Hopefully, the team will employ those kind of weapons this year.
Yeah, definitely. Also, maybe making it to the playoffs could be a good goal for this year. I know it's been a little bit, but also a little preview of our interview in this episode. I really want to try Maple Creamies now. Everyone keeps raving about it. So I think Phoebe and I will have to do like a taste test or something because I don't know. Everyone says that that is part of the culture of a Nighthawks game. So definitely on my bucket list to try that.
Very
That
much so.
is. For sure, probably on the top of the bucket list right now. Seems like something we got to try to really understand the Nighthawks culture. I'm also just excited to kind of explore New England. I've never been up there, so it's all going to be very new to me.
You'll enjoy it, and you'll especially like getting away from the heat and humidity of Virginia, especially Washington, D.C. area. Having grown up in that area, I know what a heat suck the entire area can be for the better part of June, July, August. You'll enjoy getting away from that for a little bit. A lot of the guys who come up from the South for the team have remarked before that it's a lot more comfortable up here. Although I had at least one guy from Texas a few years ago who complained how anybody could possibly live in New England where the sun never comes out. So you'll enjoy it. It'll be nice and comfortable compared to what you're used to in the summer in Virginia.
Oh, definitely. Last summer we had just heat wave after heat wave, so I'm definitely not gonna miss the 100-degree weather for weeks on end. So that's definitely something to look forward to for this summer. But since our last episode, I know it's been kind of a while since we've sat down to record. There has been some exciting new additions to the team. Adarius Myers was announced as the 2025 hitting coach for the Nighthawks. He played baseball at Louisiana Tech and was actually a member of the Nighthawks for 2 seasons and was even a 2023 NECBL All-Star. How do you guys foresee Myers contributing to this Nighthawks coaching staff?
I'm really excited by this. I'm very pleasantly surprised because I remember fondly the times that Adarius played up here. He was a late addition to the roster in the 2022 season and clearly had abilities that suited the team well at the time. Only saw 10 games, something like 30 at bats, but it was a small sample size and it gave you kind of really good taste of what he had for skills. So it was fantastic to see him come back, put in a full season in 2023. And in fact, you could tell at the last couple of weeks of the season in 23 that he was really tired. He was ready for a break, but he still maintained a very professional demeanor. He still did the best that he could. And he even went on, I believe, for a week in the Cape Cod League after the 23 Nighthawks season got done. So to hear that he has this interest in becoming a coach, I'm excited about this. I'm excited for him, especially because he is a very reserved person. At least that's the impressions I got. Reasonably soft-spoken, and to see him take on a leadership role like this, I'm really curious to see how he interacts with the players and get an idea if this is something that he's looking at as a career move, perhaps down the road.
Yeah, definitely Speaking of that leadership experience, it seems like he's getting some reps under his belt. It looks like he was a graduate manager for LA Tech this season. And then last season, he was actually named team captain for life. So that definitely speaks to the impact he made there and that he has very easily stepped into a leadership role. So it'll be interesting to see him continue to build upon this and really like come into his own now, having more of a coaching role, especially with a team he's already been with. So there's a little bit of comfortability there, knowing some of the staff already, knowing the field, and he can speak to his experience as a player as well.
Let me give you some of the bona fides here for him from his 23 season. He played in 40 games, including the All-Star game, batted 342, stole 18 bases, had a couple of home runs, 16 RBIs. Here's somebody who speaks from experience about how to play in summer ball when you're getting used to the wooden bat. So he's going to have that credibility, I think, that's going to certainly resonate, I would hope, with some of the younger players on the Nighthawks this year.
Definitely. I think, as Caitlin mentioned, that experience with kind of getting into a more leadership role with Louisiana Tech, coupled with just being able to understand the Nighthawks culture and what the expectations for each of these players are definitely going to make him a very well-rounded coach in addition to the coaching staff for the Nighthawks. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the staff and also hopefully get a chance to have him on the podcast later this season. I'm really intrigued. What do you think his experience, having played in an all-star game and then being able to coach the all-star game that's going to be hosted at Maxfield Sports Complex, what kind of layer does that add to his ability to coach this team through that game?
It just adds to the credibility issue. Somebody who's been through the experience before, it's the one opportunity, I believe, having I've only been to one and it's been a while, but knowing that you're in a scenario where there'll be a lot of pro scouts there, hopefully, seeing what's available out there, and you play well in the All-Star game, you have an opportunity, especially if you're a free agent, to sign a contract shortly thereafter. We had a catcher from Hofstra. 2 years ago, Kevin Brugman, who won the, I believe, won the MVP in the All-Star game. Next thing you know, I'm talking to him up in Vermont, wondering why he's not in uniforms because he's signed a free agent contract with the Angels. So you perform well in the All-Star game, you might have a future in the minor leagues before the summer's all out. And somebody who has played at that level certainly will add more, again, credibility to being through the entire experience and the benefits that it entails.
And I definitely think another layer on top of that was how recent it was. It was just 2 years ago. So, I mean, obviously, not much probably has changed really in the way that that game is run and the pressure that these athletes face. So, he definitely can remember his experience going through it and really guide these players through it as well and like help them deal with that pressure because it could feel like a lot is riding on this one game to get scouted and to impress these Major League Baseball teams. So, I definitely think that that. He can definitely help them through it, not just with coaching, but just like being a shoulder to lean on.
Like you said, Caitlin, it really wasn't that long ago that he was playing for the Nighthawks. How do you think that relationship between him and head coach Matt Paz is going to play out from him being his previous coach to now they're working together?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what their relationship was like when he was a player. Do you have anything to speak on to that, Greg?
Well, obviously, I've always kind of wondered how challenging it is for the player becoming coach who's still only a couple of years older than the guys he's coaching. I think having had that working relationship with Matt before will make the transition easy for Mr. Myers when he comes back up here to help coach a team. I mean, heck, within what, 5 days of this recording that he's going to be working with guys. So I don't think that's the biggest challenge. It's probably the easiest thing for him coming back to work with somebody that he knows and for whom he's played in the past. I think it's making sure that he can project the knowledge from his 4 years of college ball, from his one and a half seasons, I guess you could say, of summer ball and any and all other baseball experiences he's had with guys who may only be 2 years younger than him or 3 years younger than him. Sometimes an athlete may just not take somebody seriously who's that close to them in that age. I think that'll be Adarius's first challenge, and I think he'll get over it pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting aspect to think about is like how we've been talking about gaining credibility, and will he be able to have that credibility with the players where they can respect him and understand where he's coming from? And I hope so. And I feel like that will be something that kind of needs to be established right away, and then they can continue to move on after that.
It's kind of a neat thing that the Nighthawks have done over the years, and I would imagine this is the what comes from slowly building something as Noah Crain's done for almost 10 years now, that former players are coming back on a semi-regular basis to do some sort of coaching. Keller Bradford was here to coach the team in 19. Brian Bowen was going to coach the team in 2020, had COVID not come around. Justin Devoid coached for a while. Now he's up at Cornell. You've got now Adarius Myers with that experience at Louisiana Tech. What's next for him after he goes through this summer? I would imagine that he will, it's something that he wants to pursue as a profession, that his opportunity, if it's not already in his back pocket, will come relatively quickly after the summer gets done, if that's the direction he wants to go. Or maybe this is just a case of test driving the idea of becoming a coach. He may not necessarily have thought about this when he got out of Louisiana Tech, and now Noah and Matt have made this a possibility that, hey, you want to try this out, get a feel for it. This is the time to do it because it's the least pressurized situation in which to try to be a coach. Winning and losing is not the big priority for summer balls. Getting your reps in and having an enjoyable, relaxing, but still work-focused experience. So we'll see.
You definitely make a good point there. I hadn't realized how many former players had actually come back to the organization, but I think that just speaks volumes about the culture that Noah Crain and Matt have built for the Nighthawks in the Upper Valley, that it is so supportive of the players even after they've been long gone from playing for the Nighthawks.
I mean, these are contacts that you make now that are going to possibly end up in generating players. I would imagine having that long relationship with Keller has a lot to do with why there's somebody from Southern Miss on this roster almost every single year. These other relationships, I should say, Noah has built from running the unfortunately lamented Winnipesaukee Muskrats. So he's been doing this for 15 years now. He's got a pretty good network, I would imagine, of coaches from which to pull, and occasionally players from which to draw to become coaches down the road.
Well, here to share a little bit more about the culture of the Upper Valley Nighthawks, we have our press box director, Ray Curran, and former broadcaster for the Nighthawks and longtime Nighthawks fan, Bill Murphy. Ray, Bill, welcome to the podcast. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. It's almost that time for Nighthawks baseball.
7 days.
It's definitely fast approaching. And so, Ray, this is your ninth season with the Nighthawks as their press box director. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that role entails?
Yeah, I didn't even know it was nine until you said it. But I mean, it depends on what the day is a lot of times for a press box director. I mean, we're not exactly getting too much national media. At the NECBL, but it's just making sure A, that everything works, basically the scoreboard, microphones, stuff like that. And then you fill in where you're needed, whether it's on the microphone or whether it's on the scoreboard or whether it's playing the music, although I'm not the greatest DJ in the world, but I'm just making sure everything works correctly, basically.
And then, Bill, you've been a fan of the Nighthawks for some time. How long have you been attending the games at Maxfield Sports Complex?
Well, I go back to the beginning of the franchise. The first 3 years, I did play-by-play on the local radio station, and unfortunately, radio doesn't do as much locally anymore because they picked up the Red Sox. So, but I've seen every team that there's been. Is that how many there's been, Ray? Nine?
Nine seasons, yeah, it's about right. I missed the first season, I think. So there
Okay.
might be a couple more than that. It might be 10 or 11. I mean, Noah would definitely know.
You've probably seen more games, but I've been there more years.
So then, Bill, what would you say was like the highlight of your experience as the broadcaster for the Nighthawks?
I guess as I look back on it now, the time spent with Ryan Jeffers, who is the catcher of the Minnesota Twins, he had a really good year there, and he became a regular post-game guest. And little did you know where he was going at that particular time, but he, he was very personable, and he really, did a lot to have the community buy into the franchise, a community that I personally didn't think was going to be successful. Now, Noah decided that he wanted to bring, he had had a team in Laconia, and he wanted to bring a team to his backyard. He, grew up in Woodstock, and he wanted to, bring a team here. His first thought was Lebanon High School, and that didn't work out. So then it ended up being the new field at Maxfield. I think it has ended up being the right place. The reason I didn't think it would work is because local baseball is not really well attended, and there's lots of things to do up here outdoors in the summertime. But his dream came true. The fans have come out. I'm more than impressed. Year after year, they keep coming back. And of course, another year of free admission, thanks to the Byrne Foundation and Mascoma Savings Bank. So I think that helps. But the word free, somehow people buy it. But the bottom line is the fact that the community's been hungry for it. They turn out day after day. And this team, has felt all, every team has bought into the community. They seem to really like it.
You mentioned that the fans keep coming back every year. Going off of that, what keeps you both coming back to the Nighthawks year after year?
Well, in my
Okay.
case, I have a situation that I work, different local sports, writing in, broadcasting, and cover the team to a certain degree. And they're a team that, as I say, they're in Hartford, but they're the Upper Valley. They are definitely a team that spreads out over an area, and it already was big as far as rivalries are concerned, and it's real well located. You have three franchises. Vermont is in Montpelier, which is about a little over an hour away. Keene Swamp Bats are in Keene, New Hampshire, which is a little bit about an hour away. I knew this. I guess one of the reasons I didn't think it would work here was the Keene Swamp Bats. I knew what it meant to that community. For Keene, almost every home game is like old home days, New Year's Eve, and the 4th of July. In the 4th of July, every year, they attract thousands, for their fireworks display. And I just knew that it was the lifeblood of the community. I couldn't see that happening here. It's not at Keene's level yet, but it's pretty darn good.
I think the short answer for me, of course, is Maple Creamies, which is kind of the running joke at Maxfield, is that I'm always the first one in line for Maple Creamies every game, and it usually opens at like 5:30. But I think, also, it fits into my schedule nicely. I work in education. I'm a school counselor, so it's a summer. I think, it's good baseball, and we have fun. I mean, we'd like to win more games some years, but it's a lot of fun to go there every day and work with the people. They're really good people. And it's good baseball. I mean, it's, and maybe a slight notch below the Cape Cod League, but as you mentioned, Ryan Jeffers, and these kids can play ball. It's good baseball to watch, and you get, basically a front row seat every night. And I think, as Bill alluded to too, there are rivalries. I'll go to Keene, where I live, it's about equidistant between Keene and Maxfield, maybe a little bit shorter to Maxfield, but I'll be down there Wednesday night with my Nighthawks hat on, and we'll start it up and see what we can do.
It's so
Yeah.
funny you mentioned the Maple Creamies because those have been brought up a few times on the podcast, and Phoebe and I had never heard of them up until now. So we definitely
I
need
never heard of it until I moved up here. So that was like 10 years ago. So, but they are the best, especially Max Maple. They are the best. And I'll be sad. There are a few games each year that Noah can't get the truck to come, and he knows to let me know beforehand that they're not going to be there. So,
So then what? You don't go to the games if they're not
no,
there?
I still have to go. I'm just sad. I go there, but I'm just sad.
Oh, I'm at a point now where I call Max every home game that I'm going to go and see if they're going to be there and plan my eating habits around it. But it's funny, in the last week, two people have said to me, "When did the Nighthawks open? Is the creamy truck going to be there the first night?" So it is synonymous with, the Nighthawks. The thing that's bigger, shout out to Noah Crane. The strategy of bringing in trucks, and sometimes there's two, three, four, usually 1.5, meaning some games one, some games two. But the bottom line is they have their own concession stand, and that's giving away a little bit. But with people looking forward, like you got your press box head guy just because they got the creamies. So the bottom line of that whole thing is that it does bring people in, and it's an atmosphere. Maxfield Maco Creamy and a Fenway Frank.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, actually.
I am honestly just getting more and more excited to try these maple creamies. Like, I genuinely think you're probably the third person to bring it up on the podcast so far.
Maybe I think we'll have to do like a taste test on the
I
podcast or
think we
something
should. I mean,
because
because.
this better be life-changing. I mean, you guys are hyping it up so
Well,
much.
you've got to be ready for an order. You either have it without candy in it or with. You'll have some
Okay.
maple candy in it or don't. Ray, which way do you get it?
Well, sadly, my doctor's orders to do it without candy, so I usually go without candy. I usually will have sprinkles and usually get a helmet the first time every year, but then I just have too many helmets, so I get one helmet every season and the rest just get the cup usually.
I love getting the helmets at Fenway. I love collecting those. Those are one of my favorite parts about going too.
And I've not seen another one in the NECBL, honestly, an ice cream helmet. I'll have to pay attention to that on the road this year, but and maybe Keene has one. I don't know, Bill, but I don't think I've seen another ice cream helmet in the NECBL.
Most of the travel team places, and I've been to many of them, do have good concession stands. Keene happens to have a very good one. And again, next week, three road games open up on Tuesday night, and it'll be down in Lynn at Fraser Field. And then Wednesday night, it's at Keene. And then Friday night, the first trip this year to Maine, up to Sanford, before the home opener on Saturday the 7th, with the Vermont Mountaineers coming to town.
It'll definitely be a busy week, but I feel like starting with that, Vermont rivalry as our first home game, that'll definitely be an interesting one to watch.
Yeah, and the
You don't
Mountaineers have
know.
been really good the last few years, but we've had pretty good success against them. Although we haven't taken the jug back, unfortunately, in a couple of years, but that will be, a goal for this year.
Had it last year, but gave it away.
You guys mentioned that one of the goals is going to be to take the jug back from Vermont. What are you guys hoping to see from the Nighthawks this summer?
I mean, I think it's hard to know. I mean, right off the bat, that to know a new roster because the roster changes every year. I know there are a couple of familiar faces coming back, but I think, the Nighthawks traditionally have gotten off to a really good start and kind of fizzled at the end of the year. So I think we're hoping to be strong all the way through, July. And, there's a lot of reasons for that, I think, too. But I think, rotations change, and obviously it's a college league, so a lot of these pitchers especially are beholden to their college coaches and do not get too many innings and not too many pitches, and that makes it hard on pitching staff. So, we'll see what we can do, but I think the goal is to try to be strong at the end this year toward July, heading into the playoffs as well.
The player that I'm most excited about seeing again is Cole Fellows, played for Columbia, and he's one of several that won't be there at the beginning of the season simply because their teams are in the NCAA tournament. I believe the Nighthawks are missing eight players, at this moment in time until their teams are eliminated. And they had, I don't know, Ray, if you saw the feature in the Valley News last week. And a picture of a couple of the comeback players, including Cole Fellows, and the other one being, I can't think of, he's from Coastal Carolina, and he's a rah-rah type guy. Unfortunately, he broke his wrist last week, and he won't be coming. If he comes, he'll come later in the season. But
Right.
what both Noah Crane and Matt Paz, the manager, have told me is if you're going to talk about one thing that they want to concentrate on this year, it's speed.
And that was a hallmark a couple of years ago. Was it 2 or 3 years ago where the Nighthawks set the league record for steals? And that was a really fun team to watch. They just basically ran at will on people. So, I want to say that was Allen Rodin's year too, who now plays for the Blue Jays. He stole a ton of bases too. So, again, injuries are another thing too, to have some depth to make sure that you're playing a lot of games in a short period of time. So to depend on, some guys coming off the bench and some guys that, really want to be there. I think the college baseball in some of these leagues is tough. The NECBL is that, it's a big difference between what they're used to in rural Vermont. But I mean, a lot of people embrace this, but to make sure that everybody's on board and that and they're having fun and playing good baseball.
Yeah, that running team was a Justin Devoid team, and they really, I mean, they did run at will in just about every chance they got. In addition to that, the manager before him, I'm trying to think of his first name, Bradford, Keller Bradford, he still sends players here. He's an assistant with Southern Mississippi, and they're in the tournament, and they're a pretty good representative. And that was a fun connection for me, as because many watchers of the podcast right now will know that I covered the Red Sox for many a year, and I knew his father through that. So that was a good connection knowing him, and he, he really loved it here. He came 2 years.
It's actually funny you bring up Keller Bradford because we're really hoping to get him on the podcast episode next week when we're up in Vermont. But Bill, I wanted to ask you, from your experience as a coach, what would be your best piece of advice for players that are trying to make that adjustment to summer collegiate baseball?
Well, obviously, the biggest adjustment is the wood bat, and how they adjust to that is very important. I mean, different people have different psychs, and Matt Paz is really good at dealing with that. But the bottom line is, when you go in a slump and you are away from home and you don't have someone you really know, that's not easy to manage. So I think that the development of their use of the wood bat is crucial in how this all comes together. Now, missing players at the beginning is a negative and it's a positive. It's a negative because you're not at full strength. It's a positive because you find out what people who may not be the top players on paper, they get an opportunity and you find out who they are. So there's all kinds of fun about all this. But again, Nighthawk baseball, so many people have come to love it. And, we just hope the weather is better than last summer. I don't know how well the press box is. It leaks in any places, but there was plenty of rain, Ray.
Yeah, no, and I think, one of the things that Noah's worked on with the field is to try to get it draining a little bit better. But I think the field will be okay to start. You don't want to lose those home dates. And that's a tough thing in any CBL too, because the teams are coming from Newport or Ocean State or Martha's Vineyard. You have to make those calls pretty early in the day. And weather forecasts aren't always great, and you do the best you can. We sat through a couple of pretty long rain delays last year. And obviously that hurts numbers for the crowd too. But that's something you can't control there, It is what it is. Some things you can control, some things you can't. You can't control the weather. So I think, we'll see how it goes. But hopefully we've got all this rain out of the way, right? There can't be much rain left the next couple of months, hopefully.
Oh,
I
it's
don't
been
know. It looks
incredible.
like next week there might be a bit more rain, unfortunately.
Well, that would not
Put
be
away.
all bad because the rule is if you lose a game on the road, you play it when you go to the other place. And last year, didn't the Nighthawks lose five home games? They had to play elsewhere, Ray, because they got
I think
rained
there were
out
a
at
couple. I
home.
think they might have gained one or two as well. And it's, some of the local teams like Keene, they'll try to make it up the next time they go there. But yeah, if it's another team that they only play twice, which is usually the other division, the Southern Division, then yeah, they're going to have to make it up one way or the other. Yeah, and it's tough. Those come up fast. That hurts your pitching, even though it's 7-inning games, to go that way. But I mean, you do your best to get the games in. And it's funny when the kids come from, Mississippi or Alabama up here, and it's about 70 degrees, and that's we're out here thinking it's really, really warm. It's been in Vermont all year where it's freezing, and then they come up with their sweatshirts. Like, what the heck do you need a sweatshirt for, man? It's beautiful out. So we'll see if they get used to it. Usually the first like week, I was at a game in Montpelier probably 2 years ago. I think it was 53 degrees at first pitch in June. So, hopefully we get, like I said, the good weather definitely helps, especially if the opener, a week from Saturday, that'd be nice to have to get a really good crowd for the opener and start the season off right.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like having the All-Star game hosted, that's definitely going to bring in some people, especially for the first time. What do you guys kind of predict seeing with that being hosted for the first time by the Nighthawks?
I think it's a big opportunity for the club. I think they've worked on that for a couple of years, to get it. And I think it's going to be a big advertisement for Maxfield. I think it's going to stretch Maxfield to the brim, I think, to try to get all the stuff in there. And, definitely willing to help with that stuff to make sure everybody feels accommodated and there's enough parking and all that stuff for everybody too. But I think, it's a great opportunity to showcase, what NECBL. I think Maxfield Sports Complex is a great facility for that. There are other bigger ones. You know, as Bill alluded to, Keene with their old ballpark, which can, you know, fit a lot. Newport draws well in their old ballpark. But I think Upper Valley, you know, brings to the league a little bit of rural atmosphere, a little bit of, you know, what summer baseball is all about in a place like that. And I think the All-Star game will be a good advertisement for that as well.
Yeah, they've done such a job over the years at improving the seating and getting enough seats for everybody. It's incredible. If you looked at the facility before the Nighthawks were there, didn't even have lights, and now it has basically whatever it needs, and the bleachers, and all kinds of people coming to, bringing their chairs as well. So, as you say, June 7th, be there. Ray's going to pick them up the first time, I guess, at Keene. I'm not sure yet which one I'm going to see first, but we'll find out.
I would try North Shore, but I don't think Tuesday night traffic is going to be nice going that way. So,
You have to
I
try. Yeah, it's very tough. You got to get there early. When you
mean,
go to North Shore, one of my favorite restaurants, real near Kelly's Roast Beef and Saugus.
I hit Salem the last time I went there too. If you ever want to check out the Salem history, it's right next to Lynn as well. So.
Yeah. And of course, I can remember the first knowledge I had of Fraser Field was Channel 9 in Boston, in Manchester, used to have the highlights of the Lynn Pirates games. And maybe the 60s? I don't know how far back that goes, but that was used by a minor league team.
Oh, that's incredible.
I'm curious, you guys have been obviously huge sports fans for so long. You're into lots of other sports besides just baseball. So, what originally got you into summer collegiate ball?
I mean, I played baseball when I was little and played in different summer leagues, not to this level, played in different called Twilight Leagues in Connecticut. And then, you know, also played adult baseball in my 30s until I got a little bit old for that stuff too. And then, you know, so, and just it's kind of an extension of that. And, you know, being a baseball fan and being in the inner workings of games. And like I said before, it's good baseball. This is not, you know, these are good players. Some of them, you know, the hopes of a lot of them are to make a minor league contract to make the major league someday. How many make it? Not many, but it's still really good baseball on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's what, you know, is part of the draw too.
I think one of the most unique situations, and I think both of you will appreciate this story, is Ray and I have known each other long before Ray stepped foot in this area. We both covered college basketball, and all of a sudden, probably the two of us ended up at the same site about 10 times a year, Ray, whether it be Yale or Stony Brook or, all kinds of places. And so when Ray came to work here in this area, I'd already known him for a long time, but it wasn't a baseball connection. It was basketball.
Yeah, and baseball, you know, was my, you know, my first love, probably the sport I was best playing in, but I haven't covered it as much over the years. The last few years, covered a lot of high school games, but so, you know, it gives that kind of feel too. And, you know, it's a year-to-year thing. You want the team to do well. And unfortunately, you know, there hasn't been too many stellar seasons for the Nighthawks, you know, on the field, you know, but there's always that hope. And this is what we're looking at right now. Season starts next Tuesday. We're 0-0. You know, let's start it again and see if this is the year.
The most exciting end of season, and Ray, I don't remember, man, 5 years ago maybe, they went down to the last week of the season, and the date of the final game was up, but there was a four-way tie for the last two playoff spots, and they had in 2 days teams traveling from one field to another and playing down to find out who would be the team left. And I believe if I'm right, the Nighthawks got in that year, but they ran themselves out of pitching to get in the tournament. But that was one of the most bizarre NECBL stories I remember.
Well, and one thing we mentioned in 9 seasons, but one of those was the COVID season that didn't happen, unfortunately, in 2020. Noah and I actually went out there what should have been opening day and had a catch, you know, and that was kind of a tough time for everybody. Nobody knew what the future of the team would hold. And even in 2021, when it came back, there were special rules put in. They only played northern teams, and that was probably the most exciting moment since I've been there. They had a walk-off 13th inning win in the playoffs over Winnipesaukee, who no longer exists, the Muskrats. And, you know, so that was a fun year too. So, you know, that's what you're looking forward to.
And I feel like that definitely comes back to what you're saying of finishing the season strong of, it could go so many different ways in the playoffs, but you really have to see it through to the very end.
Yeah, and it's been tough. It's been a while since we've had playoff baseball at the Max. I think that might have been the last game actually in 2021, at the Max that year, the Winnipesaukee game. So I think it's been a while, and I think, that's a focus trying to get. And again, they've never been, since I've been there, and Bill could probably attest to this too, they've never had a really terrible team. There's been some really teams with poor records in the NECBL, and the Nighthawks have not been one of those, but they haven't been able to quite get over the hump to get in the playoffs. And once you get in the playoffs, anything can happen.
Exactly. Now, since you both have pretty much been with the team since the very start, I like to ask all the guests this question of if you could describe the Nighthawks culture in a couple words, what words would you choose?
Can I repeat the answer that you
Go
used before?
ahead, Ray.
I would say I won't. I'll skip maple creamies, but I'll say I'll say men without hats. That was how I grabbed the atmosphere at the Mac. So if you don't know who they are, then no, I probably would not hire people that don't know who men without hats are. So, but that's where I'd go with.
And I just use one word in its community.
I think that's a
Very
really good answer.
diverging answers from us on
Yeah.
that.
Both are really good answers, though. I feel like they both encapsulate the team in their own ways.
I think it's
Definitely
good
look
to
forward.
have the variety in the answers to really capture the
Yeah.
culture there.
And it's more like the culture in the press box, I think, too, as you'll see. And obviously, Marky Mark, who what he's up to these days, he's a lot more famous than his song, but we will, that's the Nighthawks winning song. So, whenever it comes on in the off season, I'll text Noah once in a while and be like, they're waiting for that song. So hopefully next Saturday night, we'll have it queued up and ready to go.
You said Men Without Hats is the Nighthawks winning song?
No, that's the safety dance, which is the seventh inning song. So they don't play the seventh inning stretch. They play the seventh inning safety dance. And do not play the extended version. I know it will come up to the press box.
Now I'm excited to hear this seventh inning safety dance and the winning song for the Nighthawks. There's definitely a lot of excitement coming up, and the season is fast approaching. I can't believe Caitlin and I are heading up on Friday. But I just want to thank you both for taking the time to be on the podcast with us today. Ray and Bill, we really appreciate it. You guys are welcome back on the podcast anytime.
And we'll see you soon.
Yeah, in just a few short days, really.
Go Nighthawks!
And now it's time for Hunting for Answers. This is a segment where we ask you, the fans, to send us your burning questions about the upcoming season by either messaging the Instagram at UV Nighthawks or giving us a shout out on Twitter, which is also at UV Nighthawks with the hashtag Hunting for Answers. Starting off, we have a question from Harry Genth, and Harry would like to know, is Nick Quagliotto the most electric player to ever put on the uniform? Listeners of the podcast will note that Nick Quagliotto was a catcher for the 2024 Nighthawks and was also a 2024 NECBL All-Star. Last season, he had 82 at-bats, 11 runs, 23 hits, a double, a triple, and a homer, all for a batting average of .280. Quagliotto was also awarded the NECBL Sportsman of the Year award. So he's definitely made a huge impact on that 2024 season to be able to earn that All-Star and Sportsman of the Year title. So I have to ask you guys, do you think he was the most electric Nighthawk, and what about him makes him an electric player?
Electric. When I think of electric, I think of exciting, explosive, and I think of that more from what's happening between the lines and what's happening outside the lines. Nick is a gentleman. He is a wonderful student athlete, and I wish nothing but the best for him. But for electric, I'm not sure if that's the word I would use to describe him. I heard a story last year. I don't know how true it is, but he was reportedly at a showcase event of some sort playing for scouts, and he so impressed one pro scout that he wanted to sign him right there and then, not knowing that he was only a teenager at the time. So you want to take that if it's true? Okay, yeah, you got to be pretty electric if you're going to get that kind of attention from a scout. I think of him more from a leadership standpoint. I mean, anybody who goes around with the nickname Sarge, you got to ask where that comes from. But if you spend enough time around him, watching him in the context of a baseball game, you get the idea why he got that nickname. I don't think I've run across anybody who is more of a rational, positive thinker in the role of catcher or leader than Nick was. So if you want to take the word electric and apply it maybe outside the lines, okay, I could buy that. Electric to me is somebody who is capable of taking over a game single-handedly at the plate or on the mound. And I'm not sure if Nick is at that level yet, but may well. Now, again, keep in mind, Nick unfortunately sustained a shoulder injury about a month ago, had to have surgery. His Fairleigh Dickinson season ended early. But he is hopeful of returning to the Nighthawks next year. Let us hope so. And we will see a even more mature person come this time next year, if indeed he does return to the team.
Yeah, I was curious about that because I saw he was on the injured list. So this summer's completely out of the question then.
Yes, that it does appear to be the case. I'm hoping he'll make a cameo and say hello to folks. But as far as I'm aware, he is strictly just in recuperation mode right now, because it's only been about a month since he had the labrum surgery.
Yeah, well, maybe we can get him on the podcast
You
then.
would get a very talkable gentleman on that. He would do, I think he would do quite well. Ask him about Night Ranger.
Okay, I'll write that
Or
down.
any New Jersey band.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, Greg. I think when I think of electric, it's definitely those big, showy plays that kind of really stick out in your mind. I haven't personally seen him play. Looking at his numbers, it seems like he did definitely have a lot of big hits, having a double, a triple, and a home run all in 1 year. But I think the point you made about his leadership skills and just the fact that he was able to earn that Sportsman of the Year award definitely speaks more about his character as a leader than maybe so his showiness as a player. So he's definitely probably one of the greatest to wear the jersey, but would I call him the most electric player? I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think if somebody fills that electric role, anybody in the recent past, probably Adarius Myers, in all honesty, because he was a threat to go deep. He was a threat to on the bases. He was a threat defensively. Not that Sarge wasn't or isn't, but when was the last time you saw a catcher get 17 steals in a summer season? That kind of thing. Sarge has a good arm. He's a good batter. I think he will improve even more with another season at FDU, assuming he isn't going someplace else, and I've got no reason to believe that he is. And he's got, yeah, I guess you could say he's got that New Jersey slash New York swagger to him, but he doesn't, he's not showy. He's not show-offy, I would say, in that regard. A great person to be around, though. A lot of fun.
All right, well, that's going to conclude this week's segment of Hunting for Answers. Thank you again for your question, Harry. And fans, please keep submitting your questions to the Instagram at UV Nighthawks, or you can also find us on Twitter at UV Nighthawks using the hashtag Hunting for Answers. But I think that's going to conclude season 3, episode 9 of the Hawks Talk podcast, Peek into the Press Box. I want to give a huge thank you to Ray Curran and Bill Murphy for joining us. And thank you to everyone for tuning into this episode. Caitlin, Greg, and I have a lot of excitement planned for the podcast this season, and we're definitely all excited to start filming those in-person episodes. I want to thank Caitlin Beal and Greg Fennell for joining me on the podcast. I'm Phoebe Winters, and this has been the Hawks Talk Podcast.